The U.S. vice president accuses China of coercion and intimidation. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. In a speech from Singapore today, Vice President Kamala Harris sought to rally U.S. allies against an increasingly assertive China. She said, though its hotly disputed claims to large parts of the South China Sea, Beijing is undermining the rules-based international order and threatening sovereignty and prosperity of countries in the region.
The livelihood of millions of people depend on the billions of dollars in trade that flow through these sea lanes each day.
Her comments come on the second day of a trip aimed at reaffirming America's commitment to the region. The BBC's Katie Silver is in Singapore following the reaction so far from the Chinese government.
Chinese state media had something of a fiery response. They had an article that was titled, "Kamala Harris Can't Rescue U.S. Credibility in Southeast Asia." And basically what it says is that China's ties at the moment here are at an all-time high. Many analysts I've been speaking with say that there is this perception that U.S. influence has diminished in the region, and really we're seeing a huge amount of investment from China. But according to this Chinese state media as well, they say that the so-called pivot to Asia from the likes of Obama and President Trump was fruitless. And so in this sense, we're seeing them pushed back on this, what is being seen as something of a diplomatic charm offensive in this five-day trip here to Southeast Asia.
So the vice president today will set off for Vietnam for her second leg of this trip. And there are parallels that have already been made between the U.S. military involvement there and in Afghanistan. Has Ms. Harris sought to reassure leaders of the U.S. commitment to the region?
Yeah, the timing is very awkward, and many here are saying, you know, it's quite inopportune, especially when Afghanistan is looming large. What they had hoped the focus had been was that they were going to show this part of the world that has in times felt a little bit rejected or overlooked by Washington, that it is now clearly on the agenda. She said that the U.S. has put itself forward to host the APEC meeting in 2023, as well as the fact that trade ties are going to be grown. She touted, really, the value of the U.S. economy, saying it's having its biggest growth in decades, and talked about the huge amount of trade between Southeast Asia and the U.S., saying, for instance, it creates about 4 million jobs for Americans and that there's in the order of about $2 trillion of reciprocal trade. She said that Southeast Asian region is critically important to the U.S.'s security and prosperity. So really trying to make this region feel special in the U.S.'s future foreign policy.
The BBC's Katie Silver in Singapore. Thanks for following this for us.
Thanks, Victoria.
Well, staying on issues around China, worries about a widespread regulatory crackdown in the country has weighed on technology shares there in recent weeks. But as we check the numbers this morning, there's been a bit of a change in tone. The Shanghai Composite Index rallied 1% with similar gains in Japan. Hong Kong's Hang Seng jumped 2.4%. To Afghanistan now, where President Biden is under increasing international pressure to maintain military presence there beyond the end of the month. That issue is the focus of a virtual G7 meeting today. America's allies want to allow more Afghan civilians to be evacuated. Those who have made it out of the country face a number of questions about their futures, including where to find shelter. This morning, Airbnb said it's lending its support, as the BBC's Stephen Ryan reports.
Airbnb's charitable arm, Airbnb.org, is an independent nonprofit that works to find temporary housing for people during times of crisis, like, say, if they're displaced by a natural disaster. During the Afghanistan crisis, it's already working with NGOs to find places to stay for up to 1,000 refugees arriving in the US. Now, it's expanding that effort. Today, it said it'll work with other organizations to provide temporary housing for 20,000 Afghan refugees around the world. Funding will come from Airbnb.org's multi-million dollar refugee fund and contributions from Airbnb and its co-founder boss, Brian Chesky. The big question, though, is how temporary is temporary? Well, the company wouldn't give specifics, but said it and its charity partner are prepared to adapt support as needed. I'm the BBC's Stephen Ryan for Marketplace.
Last month, the UN's cultural body, UNESCO, made waves here when it revoked Liverpool's World Heritage designation. The move was met with fury by many who see the northern English city as one that honors its past while also evolving economically. Just outside the now former World Heritage site is a district called the Baltic Triangle. It's an old industrial area home now to artists, filmmakers, and young entrepreneurs. I met up with Liam Kelly, chairman of MAKE. That's an organization that provides support for businesses in the area. He explained how this historic area has stayed true to its roots while also nurturing a vibrant cultural scene.
the story of it starting is probably the same as every other place similar like this in the Western world. It was about the availability of space, the affordability of space, the gentrification of the centre of the city. So initially that was the music venues, some of them being pushed out of the city centre and setting up out here, and then a couple of independent arts venues set up, a two-yearly arts festival, and like it just snowballed from there.
And a lot of the buildings, I imagine, look like what they looked like for their original purpose. The developers have kept them true to what they are while also transforming them. So how important is this area's heritage to the consideration of what it becomes in the future?
Good question. Liverpool has a complex heritage, and this area is no different to that. So one block will look like Victorian brick warehouses, and then another block will look like sort of mid-2000s, maybe 60s, 80s sort of buildings. And some of them have been converted really well, some of them have been converted really nicely, some of them are in disrepair. But that is this whole city looks like, because, you know, it was bombed really heavily in the Second World War. It became fashionable to clear sites. I think in the 50s and 60s, the country didn't really care too much about heritage, particularly city heritage. And Liverpool was really in poor economic decline, and there wasn't a lot of money to invest in these buildings, so they went unoccupied for a very long time, and some of them were just beyond saving.
So how important is it to keep them as close to their original appearance as possible? How important is preserving that heritage?
Appearance is an interesting word to use, because design and the way that buildings look is one of the big criticisms that people have about the development, particularly in the Baltic. Quality is really hard in a city where land value is really low. There's a lot of compromise in order to get things built, and some of the stuff that's been built over the last 10 years has been awful, really, really awful. And some of it has been really, really great. So we've got this like mixed fabric of great quality and poor quality, and I think that that's what's frustrating some people when it comes to preserving heritage and the way things look.
What is the approach then to developing this area?
Well, there isn't a uniformed approach, that's the issue. There is a strategic regeneration framework, but it's not part of planning law, so really you're at the mercy of the private developer and their view on what is quality, and the planning authority haven't had much power or willingness over the last 10 years. Yeah, we haven't been very brave in saying no.
So what do you think needs to happen in order to continue to rejuvenate the area?
I think that the question of ownership is a key thing for the whole city and probably for the whole country. But if you want an area to be regenerated by activity, which is what's happening right now, instead of being a victim of gentrification where the activity creates buzz and excitement and wealth, and then that eventually forces the creators to leave because literally floor rents go too high, well, you counteract that with ownership. If the people who are doing the change and taking the action are the ones that own it, and they're the ones that benefit from the uplift in wealth and the uplift in value, then they can use that again to do the next thing rather than just being moved on.
Liam Kelly, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Well, if you want to know more about UNESCO's decision to revoke Liverpool's status, producer Stephen Ryan and I traveled there to find out what it means for the city. You can find me on Twitter at Victoria Craig. There, I've shared a link to that story, which aired yesterday afternoon on Marketplace. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.